So today I'm in Brighton and the sun's starting to come out and we're nearly at St. Paddy's Day. I've just been so excited about this episode because we've been promising to do this for a long time. And my guests today are an absolute double threat in the curry and craft beer world. And it's Mayor and Marco from Bundlebust, who you probably know. The guys at Bundlebust have created something really special, and my wish for them is that they just grow and grow and grow and grow and get into the national consciousness even more than they already have. I've always thought it's been a brand, a product and an experience that has always punched above its weight, and it was just great sitting down with the guys today talking about how they started out, a few calamities along the way as well when they were doing some street food collabs, and then using their influences and upbringings and cultures from the craft beer world and the Indian food world and smashing them together to create one of the best food babies that you've ever seen. To me, Bundlebust is one of the brands that just looks so strong, so energetic and really memorable in everything that it does. And that then leaks through into the experience, the design of the restaurants, all of the customer touch points, and of course the wonderful marketing that always, always seems on point, always building brand, never selling you anything. And obviously we touch on the scandal at Christmas around the cease and desist from Iceland. It's a great episode. I really wish I lived closer to the boys because I think we'd hang out an awful lot more. And I just think I've got a lot to say. The both of them are just so charming and so humble for all of the success and the greatness that they obviously are capable of. So enjoy the episode and I'll see you on the flip side.
Welcome to Supersonic Hospitality Marketing with me, Mark McSee, where we meet the most interesting people in hospitality, marketing, business, and beyond to hear tips, tricks, and tales to help your brand boom. This podcast is sponsored by Vita Mojo, the all-in-one restaurant management platform helping operators grow ATV, reduce tech complexity, and serve guests better. And now, here's a quick word from our sponsors. Vita Mojo is proud to be the headline sponsor of the Supersonic Marketing Podcast. Vita Mojo transforms chaos into confidence for hospitality operators worldwide, empowering brands to streamline order management and take control of their business. With its flexible end-to-end order management system, Vita Mojo gives you one central place to manage your menu across every channel, brand, and location. But Vita Mojo is much more than an out-of-the-box software solution. The Vita Mojo team are with you every step of the way, providing the partnership you need, the technology you want, and the experience your guests deserve, all in one place. Vita Mojo will help you adapt to whatever the world throws at your hospitality business. For more information, visit vitamojo.com/supersonic.
Hi everyone, I'm Lucy, Head of Sales at Airship and Toggle. Hopefully you've heard of us before, but in case you're not sure what we do, let me bring you up to speed. Airship is a leading hospitality marketing CRM, supporting operators by building a better understanding of their customers' visiting habits to help them target, personalise and automate their marketing and deliver a return on investment. And Toggle, which is our gift card platform and generated a whopping £48 million for the sector in 2023 through the sale of prepaid gift cards, experiences, tickets, merchandise, and so much more. I'm here to tell you a little secret though. Airship CRM have a huge update coming, which is going to change hospitality marketing in 2024, making it faster and stronger than ever before. If you want to learn a little bit more before we launch, just get in touch with me on lucy@airship.co.uk, or you can visit our website to learn more about what we do for hospitality at airship.co.uk.
So it gives me the most too much spicy pleasure ever to introduce my next guests, who are the Ant and Dec of the curry and craft beer world. Welcome to Mayor and Marco from the legendary, and Brighton needs one, Bundlebust. Hello.
Hi, Mark. How's it going?
It's all good. Friday, innit?
Friday feeling.
Friday feeling. Couple of wee drinks tonight, maybe. Let's see how we get on. But yeah,
it's been a big week, so maybe take it easy today. But hey, it's been good.
Well, I had a boozy lunch on Wednesday, which I rarely do. I always get stressed going for lunch meetings and all that because just you'll get so much to do, sort of thing. So I took some time out, almost like took it as a day off almost. But I went to Bouchon Racine in Farringdon. So Dave Strauss and Henry Harris's place, you know. So
nice.
Dave's a neighbour down here, so I've been threatening to go for a long time, you know.
We were there a few months ago. I think before Peach.
Right.
Time, yeah, we went for a leisurely lunch there. Fantastic spot. And yeah, the food was fantastic. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
It was class.
Something about a restaurant above a pub, that seems to be popular at the moment, I guess.
It seems to be de rigueur. I think also, you know, just every single one of the staff were just so fantastic. There was so many of them. And it was quite nice. A couple of them we both realised that we knew each other from old, sort of thing. So that was quite nice as well, you know. But everyone, and what was nice was other diners, we all spoke to each other. You know, it was a bit like, oh, what are you having? And, oh, this is our third time here and did it, you know, this. But yeah, white asparagus was out of this world. I think it's a very, very short season for white asparagus. So that was amazing. And then we had like a, they'll kill me for saying this, but it was almost like a kind of duck platter. So it was assiette de bouchon or something. So basically it was just, yeah, duck a go-go, which was pretty special, you know. So
It's funny, we've had a pretty fun-filled week. We've had a NRB up in Manchester.
Oh,
so
yeah. How did it go?
Interestingly, for the first time, all you London crew were in the north. So it was the other way around for us. So it was pretty cool. But yeah, it was really good. Really good to catch up with people, get to sort of chat about what's happening out there. But yeah, it was a smart little week.
And you did a panel, didn't you, Mayor, on the future of Northern hospitality?
Yeah, a little panel chat. So yeah, hopefully this will be a bit better than that.
Well, why not start there then? What is the future of Northern hospitality?
I think it's really exciting. I think at the moment you've seen how many of the brands are kind of coming up, and they're all brands that we admire. Going down to London, we always get inspired by going down there, and me and Marco tend to try and hit up spots that really, really excite us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great that some of them are coming up north. And I think Manchester in general it's got a real sort of London feel to it without it, you know, offending any mank. It's it's just busy, it's exciting, it's got a great independent culture. So yeah, I feel like some of the brands that are coming definitely will fit and do really well.
Nice. What about you, Marco? You get anything to add?
Yeah, I think it is exciting. I think it's a lot of new and interesting stuff's happening in Leeds, Manchester and Liverpool. And it's just got a nice independent and friendly feel, and it's quite neighbourly, I think. And it's nice to get the London boys coming up as well. I know some people are quite territorial. It's like, oh, this city's ours. But it shows that we're moving on, really. Not only are we producing our own homegrown talent and exciting new brands, we're kind of getting the great operators from London opening up too, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I adore Manchester, and I think from being from Glasgow, it's so the same. You know, it's so linked. You know, I really feel at home in Manchester more so than Liverpool or, you know, Birmingham or anything like that, or Newcastle even. You know, Glasgow and Manchester feel really twinned. You know, there's just a real joint vibe there, you know.
I feel so. I've been to Glasgow a few times. I'm actually going in a few weeks as well. But it's just got the same vibe. I can't But I don't know why, but it just got that same realness, or it's slightly gritty and there's loads of interesting food and drink, and the bars are good and the pubs are good. It's just a cool spot, right?
Yeah, and great music, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
As well. In fact, John Squire and Liam Gallagher have just kicked off their tour in Glasgow the other night. So that felt like the right place for them to do it, you know. And then there was a wee cover of Jumpin' Jack Flash at the end as well, which was quite cool, you know. But a lot of people are annoyed. It's £75 a ticket and they didn't even touch the hour mark. So, yeah.
What can they do? What can they do? Well, bananas, right?
Yeah, they said they're not going to do Oasis and Stone Roses songs, but I could really see them doing Standing Here. I think Liam Gallagher doing Stone Roses Standing Here would be an absolute banger, you know, of all those. But they're a bit sacrosanct, aren't they? But yeah, the Bar of Lands was jumping, as you can imagine, with that sprung dance floor, which was quite cool. So yeah. Anyway, I suppose we better talk about hospitality. So just thinking about you guys then. So obviously I'd heard of you guys for a long time. And then I was lucky enough to work with Arc Inspirations, you know, for a couple of years, helping them with, you know, sort of the brands and brand definition and that kind of stuff with Martin and Annie. And I got taken to one of the Leeds ones with the agency that we had, Engage. And I think we went on a Monday at like 5-ish, and you still were semi-queuing to get in. And I just loved it from the get-go. So can you tell us about that then, in terms of, you know, a little bit of what you were doing before, and then I guess a bit of the story of Bundlebust and how it all came together, really?
Yeah, sure. I'll kick off with, I guess my sort of origins were my mum and dad, they had a deli in Bradford that did sort of vegetarian sort of snacks for the Indian community. So you're thinking like Bombay mixes, few samosas on a tray. And it really started off really small. My dad was a mechanic and he just felt my mum was just this incredible home cook. So any kind of Diwali party or any kind of catering opportunity, my mum would be the one that would be called upon to sort of hook it up. So I kind of grew up in Prasad sort of early years. So we lived above the shop. We used to serve food out of the deli. Me, my brother and my sister, we'd work that, we'd do that every day. So kind of grown up in hospitality from day one. Mm. And that naturally I had a passion for the food. So my brother was, my brother's a bit older than me, but he was incredible with front of house. I was more passionate about the food. So I'd help out in the kitchen a little more. And as Prasad kind of gained a popularity, it kind of started to, my brother really wanted to push it towards being a restaurant. Mm-hmm. So we took the unit next door, which was a laundrette, which we ran at the time, called Posh Wash. counting 20p's out of the spin dryer every week was fun.
That's a craft beer name in waiting, isn't it?
It is, man. Yeah.
I've always wanted to open a bar in a laundrette.
Yes. There's one up north, is there not? Like, it's a, because I've seen people playing gigs in front of tumble dryers and whatever. There's some sort of laundrette venue. I can't remember what it is. Yeah, yeah.
We were serving up samosas and kachoris and snacks through the hat to people waiting to watch their washing. So it was pretty cool, man. It was really, really class. And then Prasad really kind of started motoring because it got a bit of TV. Gordon Ramsay's Best Restaurant was the show at the time, and that my mum and dad and my brother and me, we were on the show, and we ended up becoming runners up to Casimir in Bristol. So it was just insane to be kind of pitted up against some of the best in the UK.
Yeah.
And that experience really sort of catapulted Prasad and its popularity, certainly in Bradford. So we moved to more of a purpose-built restaurant, and it was exactly at that time, I think it was about 9 months to a year into Prasad, the new location, in where I was sort of feeling I really enjoyed the more chill, casual element of what Prasad was in terms of its food. And yeah, just reached out to Marco, who had a bar in Bradford at the time, with a tweet, as simple as that. I tweeted Marco, hey, do you want to do a collab? Do you want to do an event where we can do a bit of food and you guys can do a bit of the beer and bring the two cool businesses of the time in Bradford together? And then, yeah, over to you, Marco.
Yeah, so before I had the beer bar, I guess I studied graphic design at Bradford Uni, and I really got into kind of visual stuff and how things look, and I was passionate about that. But while I was doing that, I started promoting gigs and fell into managing bands and putting on some pretty big gigs in Bradford and Leeds.
Who were those kind of bands then? Who was?
Oh, I put the XX on. That was their first show outside of London. Who else? Art Brew, British Sea Power, Slow Club. And I also managed a band an act that got signed to XL Records. So I spent a lot of time in London, and that's kind of when I got into food and drink, really. I remember going to Wagamama's for the first time and thinking it was amazing, you know? Yeah, and then it kind of didn't work out for me, to be honest. Long story short, so I was doing the gigs and the management, but it was kind of tough times, and, you know, it was a tough gig to get into, really, to make a proper living out of it. So I was a teaching assistant for a bit, just to keep me tying over, which I absolutely loved, but I don't think I could have ever stepped up to be a bona fide teacher. I could see how hard it was, really. And then I was thinking, I need to do something. I started getting into beer, and I had some experience in marketing, especially promoting events. And I thought, I'm going to do a little beer bar in Bradford, something I'm passionate about. And it's going to attract not only the cool kids who are into art and music, but we were near Valley Parade. So we'd get the football fans in, and when we'd get the real ale drinkers in, and nothing much was happening in Bradford at the time. So it's like a cool hangout, really. And I guess that's when Maya got in touch to do the event, really. Nice. And we did a few pop-ups at my pub was called The Sparrow. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of at a time when craft beer was just kind of making it through, I guess. I think in the north of England, you probably had the North Bar in Leeds, Sheffield Tap, Port Street Beer House in Manchester that just opened. So you had, before that, you had great pubs selling ale and great bars, but there was this new thing of people really going into the detail of craft beer, getting all the juicy stuff from America, and new breweries were launching as well in the UK. So it was a really exciting time. And we used to put street food events on outside. So every Friday we'd have someone rock up with a van. And so kind of, it's pretty interesting. But yeah, Mayer did a few pop-ups, and then we went to Mayer's restaurant, Prashad, or his brother's restaurant, or family restaurant, and we did more of a six-course tasting menu. So Mayer's sister-in-law had cooked the dishes with Mayer, and we'd pair the beers, and it was a bit more of a formal experience. And then I guess we thought it's a pretty good idea. Maybe we should continue to explore it by doing more pop-ups and events and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we did a few absolute clangers. A complete waste of time, but definitely some of the events we did were just genuinely a great way for, I guess, me and Marco to work out a brand, work out a product, work out an offer, and I think that's those moments were actually really formative, but definitely questioned if this was the thing that we wanted to do. So I remember obviously rocking up in a couple of bars and a couple of pubs where you could just see the customers were almost like, I don't get it. Why is this here? Like, what's this? What's the food? You know, because genuinely, even back then, when you talk about street food in bars and pubs, you were still talking sort of Americana, burgers, fries, loaded, you know, messy food that fit the drinking culture. But I think both me and Marco were very, you know, Indian food and beer has just always been a natural pairing. It's just never really been taken seriously in both aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So with the craft beer and emergence of that entire market, all of those weird and wonderful, interesting beers that were coming out at the time. And then even the food that we do, which is Gujarati in its sort of DNA, I can't really confidently say that our cuisine is Budrati, but it's kind of got it as a thread that kind of goes through all of our dishes. And even that food wasn't, it's not widely represented or even known. So yeah, I think the two of it just made complete sense.
And but how would you explain Gujarati then to people?
So Gujarat is a state in India which it's had quite a movement, but it was very much a farming kind of spot. So lots of sugar cane, lots of land, but vegetarian as a state. It's actually a dry state in India as well. So there wasn't much alcohol. I mean, I think they probably consume the most alcohol and possibly even meat now.
Right.
But it's fundamental, you know, my grandparents generationally have been vegetarian. I was brought up vegetarian. So it was it's never a thing that I like to even consider as being a cuisine. As I don't see vegetarian food as a separate menu. Or a sign. It's just great food that's actually historically been made to be tasty throughout the years. It's been evolved to be tasty. It never was evolved to be, hey, here's a chunk of protein, here's a chunk of carbs, here's a chunk, you know, that's not how our ancestors would have eaten. And funny enough, my great grand was 103, so she'd never touched a piece of meat in her life.
Wow. Well, there's a lesson.
So yeah, it's just. I think that ethos, that ethics, that sort of authenticity, and even authenticity, traditionalism. I'm going to go off on one, but I don't think that's what Bundo is or about. It's I love pushing the boundaries with it. Like Indian food, it's so varied. That we might as well not sort of bang the drum about something being authentic or traditional. We might as well do a German spin for Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
We might as well do Indo-Chinese, which is what the kids in India are eating now. Like that to me is really exciting. I think that's where Bundo sits from its food offering.
So going from these collabs then into Restaurant One and all the rest of it, plus the brand coming about, were you trading as Bundo Bust in the street food days, or was it once you were opening the actual first restaurant?
First few pop-ups, it was Sparrow and Prashad doing something together. But I think, the first event as Bundo Bust, we launched it at Leeds Beer Festival September 2013 would have been the date that Bundo Bust was officially born, I guess.
And the name coming
and it was a... Sorry.
And the name, how did that come up? Where did you discover that or borrow it from? Or
we were looking at loads of names, and I honestly can't remember any of the ones we didn't use anymore. I can't remember a single one. And we were trying to come together with how can we represent both of our backgrounds and our where we're from. And basically there's a book called Hobson Jobson, and it kind of lists out like a glossary of words, terms, of sort of colloquial language where it just got mashed up between the British language and the languages of India. So you kind of had lots of these words were in there, things like shampoo, bungalow, their origins are actually various languages in India.
They've kind of
been mispronounced to make them easier to be said in English. And Bundabus was in there, and we clocked it, and I think we both liked it, batted it around a little while. But the sort of dual meaning to it was collaboration was one of them. It was like, what's that? You could use it in a phrase. So it'd be like, what's that blunderbust over there? Which would mean, what's that noise? What's that hoo-ha? Or hullabaloo? Yeah. Like, it'd be used like that as a term. And we just resonated with it. And we felt, listen, that's the one. But yeah, genuinely, really no idea. No idea about any of the others. Can't remember.
Yeah. Well, it's really fun. And I think, you know, when the restaurants are busy, which is often, you know, I guess that tips its hat to the atmosphere and the buzz and the, you know, as you say, hullabaloo or brouhaha or whatever you want to say that's going on in there as well, which is pretty fantastic. But it's such a pop art, punchy, memorable word, you know. It's like, you know, it's always stood out to me. And I think the design and the graphics and the attention to detail that you've given with it, you know, I think it's just, you know, it really, really just stands out a country mile. You know, it's fantastic.
Great. We have a few people that thought it was like a, what was it, the blunderbuss?
Yeah, blunderbuss. They thought we were a German restaurant.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you were talking about Wagamama earlier on. The first time I heard about Wagamama, I was living in London, and I automatically thought it was an Italian just because of the mama. And then it wasn't until I went along and seen it. But yeah, I just, when someone was kind of describing it to me, until they said the food, I just had it in my head. It was like this new style of Italian and all that. So what about Restaurant One then? And how did you prepare to open that? You know, what were all the things that you had to look at and do to get that going?
Well, I guess we kind of knew the landlord, so that was kind of helpful. He was a customer at the Sparrow and Prashad, and he was at one of the early pop-ups. He kept saying, we've got a site for you, you should take it, but we kind of didn't know how reliable this guy was. No offense to him, he's a really nice guy and the best landlord we've got. But yeah, so we finally, after him kind of chasing us for a while, we finally looked at the site and reasonable rent. It was on a street just off of the main kind of, the main street in Leeds, but still in a great location, just off the beaten track slightly. And I guess we were doing the pop-ups and honing our kind of concept. And if we made any money, which was rare from the pop-ups, we'd kind of put it into the fund to kit out the restaurant, really. But me and Maya kind of did a lot of the grunt work, I'd say. We were in the restaurant ripping stuff out Monday or Friday, and then we'd be doing Friday, Saturday evenings doing a pop-up somewhere, right, to get the name.
Yeah, there's lots of, like, I wish I could sort of condense it into sort of a way of, you know, when you think about the things after the fact, whereas at the time, there's a lot of, like, organic bits that just sort of plug in together.
Yeah.
So even the builder, Matt, who is incredible, he was a builder that we used for a fit out, well, for a little bit of a fit out in Prasad. So me and Matt, I kind of self project managed and designed that site, and it was sort of my first project because I'm very much into my interiors, very similar with Marco in terms of visual identity and brand. So it was a project that me and Mac had a lot of fun with. And he was from Bradford. So there's this combined knowledge of the Sparrow. And it was like, right, cool, I'll do this with you. But on a complete and utter shoestring budget. And then also at that time, I remember it's, you know, when we, as founders, as we go through this journey, you become better and better at business. Mm-hmm. And at the start, genuinely put my hands in the air and say, listen, we're not very good at business at the start. And it was putting a business plan together for me and Marco was probably the most painful experience I think I've ever had. Because it was, how do we get all this shit in our minds onto a page and for someone with a suit to take seriously?
But
I think that cheeky personality actually is bigger than what the words on the page could have ever been. So yeah, we got a loan. Bank said that they'd go in with us. Great bank manager that took us to pretty much to Piccadilly, and may have helped. No, can't remember. I may have helped us finance Liverpool, but then you start moving up the ladder within the banking system, and then you get introduced to a bigger fund manager or however it works. So it's just, it really organic, Mark. Everything. Yeah, yeah. It's just, yeah.
It was the same bank manager, wasn't it, that we used at the Sparrow and you used at Prashad. So it was, again, everyone kind of knew each other, really.
It just frightens the life out of me. You know, just like all the, you know, all the grown-up stuff, you know, like debt and, you know, meetings and loans and, oh, God, yeah, it just gives me the fear. But, you know, I just take my hat off to anyone that's out there doing it, you know. It's fantastic.
I think we genuinely smashed it together last hour when it was due, and it was downstairs in the Sparrow. I think I remember us just saying, right, we're going to have to get this down on a page of words. Don't know how we're going to do it.
And there was no chat GPT at the time either, so no, you can cheat it. Yeah.
Wikipedia didn't tell you that stuff. I studied A-level business, but I left because the coursework was you had to write a business plan. So it was too much for me, so I left A-level business. I dropped out and then had to write a real-life one.
I did business studies at uni, so I should have been better at it, but hey-ho. It's just really good. And obviously support as well, like massive amounts of support. I have my brother, Mark, at the time. You had Les at Sparrow.
Les.
So there was support around that we could have always sort of backed and looked at. But I think everyone was still very not sure that this was going to work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you did it, and obviously, you know, if it was an exam, you've passed, right? You've sort of exercised that ghost of writing business plans and all the rest of it for real. So, that must be quite pleasing. And then, just in terms of the development of the food, then, I mean, getting that menu down and, you know, just figuring that all out at a restaurant scale, you know, how did you go about that?
I think we had a few core ideas of how we wanted to serve the food. Certainly how we serve the food now is exactly in terms of everything arrives at the same time, which is something I've been very passionate about at Bundo. Nightmare for chefs, but we've managed to do it, and it's something that I really, really enjoy, because that's how I grew up eating, and that's how I've always seen Indian food as being.
Yeah.
Like, there's no course structure. It makes me really a little bit sad when it turns into the flow of it. It's not the way that the food is eaten. You know, you want to be grabbing an okra fry and dunking it in a chaat. You want to be completely messing around with flavors, sweet, sour, salty, spicy. You want it all going on.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of medley of flavors that you want to kind of represent. So that was kind of, I think, the first thing. It was like, right, we want loads of small crunchy bits, soft bits, hot bits, cold bits. Like, we just want it all on the plate. And I think from that, the development of the dishes started to come through. I think we were more traditional and authentic at the start. Mm-hmm. I think if I was to look at the old OG menu, I think I could probably recognize most of it as being, hey, my mum used to cook that.
Right.
Whereas I think now where we're at, I could probably... There's still a few core elements. There's still some stuff in there that is still exactly how it should be, exactly how I had it.
Yeah, yeah.
But our confidence has grown, and I think our customer base is really kind of they follow us on that journey. Like, you know, we launched Indo-Chinese last week or week before. Forgotten now. But yeah, Indo-Chinese. Yeah, we've launched Indo-Chinese, and it's been a campaign that we've ran pretty much every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it blows me away how people react to it. It's like, oh, it's back. Quick, let's get a book in. Let's get in there. And you're talking about our interpretation of prawn toast. That's got nothing to do with variety cuisine or, you know, and I love that. I think that's the most exciting part of our food.
And also, in terms of the food itself, I mean, what are the best sellers then?
So, after I've said all that about the dishes that are really exciting, it's the OG.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, isn't it? Yeah.
It's one of them. Bundo chaat is genuinely still one of my favourite dishes. I probably have at least four or five a week.
Mm.
So it's it's the bread, samosa pastry, chickpeas, potato, tamarind, cumin yogurt, a little bit of chili, onion, turmeric noodles.
Yeah.
And it's like that. I just love the fact that it's cold. So I remember selling these at Prashad, and it was the dish that people from any background used to come for. You'd get the lecturers from the uni, you'd get the Pakistani community, you'd get the Bengalis, you'd get the Hindus, you'd get everyone would sort of enjoy it. But it'd take them a bit of a dive to try it, because cold potato, cold chickpeas, and Indian flavors do still scare people. They're like, I don't get it. It needs to be warm.
Yeah.
But I'd say the chaat is number one. I think okra fries are super popular.
Mm.
And then I'd probably go to like the paneer dishes are at the moment doing really well at Bundo. So paneer tikka, paneer kadai, they're really popular.
Yeah.
And sorry, Matt.
I was going to say, what's the one with it's got the pomegranate seeds in.
So yeah, Belpuri.
Yeah.
Similar profile to chaat.
I love that.
Slightly different texture. Yeah.
What about you, Mark? Are you get any favourites or?
I have dal and rice is my go-to.
Yeah.
I always think that's such a staple dish. It's quite a simple dish, but it's the most warming dish as well. And the one that, if you know that's spot on, everything's going to be spot on. So that's kind of my favourite. I buzz off the specials, like Maya says, but what else? Vada Pav's a classic. The paneer dishes, but dal and rice is probably the one that I'll eat the most of.
Yeah.
I think what's super interesting is our dishes they're really well known. Listen, there's a number of incredible operators out there that are doing some of the same dishes on their menu. And I kind of like that a lot. And I kind of like the fact that they're not curries.
Yeah.
So something I always talk about is like, I hate it when people represent Indian food with just that thing, it's got to be a curry with a tree of naan on the table, and it's got to have a stack of poppadoms with a pickle tray. And there's 100% a place for that. And I still love a curry, but that's a different. It's a different space to where we operate.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd be the most happiest when there is no more curries on our menu. I think we've got like three that you could probably class as being a curry right now. Yeah. But I'd be really chuffed when we get to the point where you don't need it. It doesn't need to be a stew.
It's interesting, you know, but as you say, sometimes you're kind of in the mood for that, you know, that off menu poppadoms or bread sort of scenario. But I think it's interesting, you know, down here we've got a few options down here in Brighton. You know, there's one called Easy Tiger, which is like a you know, pretty nice pub with you know, that sort of more street food, you know, non-traditional bites really that's going on. And then obviously with the food complementing that really well is the beers. So as you started, were you brewing from day one, or did you have a kind of greatest hits of beer and then sort of slide into that? How did that work?
Yeah, so we didn't brew from day one. That came in our fourth restaurant at the Manchester Oxford Street. We just wanted to work with kind of independent, new, fresh brewers, so local ones, a few from Scandinavia. There was a lot of good wholesalers and importers in the north of England. Two of the biggest kind of beer importers in the country were based in Leeds and Huddersfield. So access to loads of fresh beer. We always thought that beer and spicy food went well together. I think no one really was... In a casual dining setting, no one was doing beer and food, really. I thought Byron did it well at the time, 10 years ago. They were having super juicy American IPAs with burgers, and I think maybe that inspired us in a way. But we started off by doing collaborations with local breweries. So we wanted to have our own bespoke beer, but it'd be a collaboration. So they'd brew it with our input in terms of recipe development and flavor profile, and we'd have a collab beer. But as restaurants started taking beer a bit more serious because it started becoming a trend, and other restaurants started to do collab beers. And then we thought, listen, we kind of, you know, it's what we do, right? So we thought, let's do our own brewery legitimately and make our own beers just for us. And that was kind of the reasoning. And plus, you know, we wanted to cement, we make our own food fresh, and we want to make our own beer too, right? The two, they're both important parts of the business, and we want to kind of own each aspect, really.
And
I think,
who do you
think is...
Go on, yeah.
Sorry, I think as well, like, how we were buying beers from, like, all over the world at the time, at the start, weren't we? It was, like, literally US, Europe, and it was this my entire journey of beer knowledge came via Bundo and Sparrow and Marco, and it was very... I was very early into the game, but then a lot of these flavor profiles that we talk about from hops, things like mango, passion fruit, that we kind of get from this, is tropical flavors. It's like the perfect thing to go with zingy, punchy foods. Yeah. So it's like, although we're kind of hyper trained into thinking lager, spicy food, it's still a beautiful pairing. I mean, hence why we've got one of our own that we paired for that purpose, but all of the tropical flavors is exactly how you, it's kind of what you want as well.
Yeah.
So there's that whole like journey as well.
Yeah.
And what, it's interesting times to be, it's still new, and it's amazing to see that you can pretty much walk into any pub now and they've got, or any restaurant, they've got a great beer on, right?
Yeah.
And we've come a long way in 10 years, I guess, as an industry to represent beer, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I still don't think it's going away. I mean, next to me here in Brighton, we've got, you know, sort of one of the most famous crafty pubs in the area, the Hole in the Wall. And, you know, and it's just new beers every day. You know, it's you know, it's whatever they're going to have in next is on. Once that is gone, it's gone. They have one house lager, and then there's, you know, 20 different beers every single day, and it's absolutely packed. And in fact, the Roma fans were in town last night for the Brighton Roma game, you know. So apparently they were all, I was away, but there was a police cordon. They were all around my square and probably getting in there for a pint and all the rest of it, you know. So that would have been like super interesting for them.
A creative agency for the hospitality sector, Saved by Robots create compelling brands and memorable experiences through great design and engaging storytelling. From Scottish Restaurant of the Year Sugar Boat to Tipjar, the digital tipping platform that's taken over the world, Saved by Robots excel at bringing ideas to life. As well as developing new concepts and refreshing existing brands, the robots provide outsourced graphic design to help multi-site operators grow with confidence. Check out their work and get in touch at savedbyrobots.com.
Triple Seat, the ultimate event management software for your hospitality venue. Used by 15,000 venues globally, including Daisy Green, Aqua, Nobu, Puttshack, and many more, join Triple Seat today and grow your event business. Our web-based software saves up to 30-plus hours of event admin time per month. Go from inquiry to booked event quicker with Triple Seat. We integrate into leading platforms like OpenTable and Seven Rooms. Cut down on event admin and streamline the event management process with Triple Seat. Book a demo today at tripleseat.com.
I mean, in terms of you knowing how to brew beer, though, like, I mean, where did you even start with that? And, you know, did you have to go in courses, or did you get some advice, or how did that work?
Well, we knew quite a lot of breweries because we'd kind of worked with them and supported them. So I had some friends in the industry that, that give us some sound advice. But we advertised for a brewer on a Facebook forum, which are UK craft beer jobs or something. Mm-hmm. Like that, and we met a few fantastic brewers that work with some good breweries, but we chose Dan, who we've got and has been heading up the brewery since day one, really. And he was in Amsterdam at the time, working for one of the head brewer at one of Amsterdam's kind of best breweries called Oucher. Well, it's Haarlem, which is just outside of Amsterdam, and he wanted to come back to the UK because he was from here originally, and yeah, and it just worked out. And he kind of shared the same philosophy in beer as well, as as us guys. So it was just, it just worked out. It was a perfect fit.
Yeah. I think I remember when we met Dan, it was like this, it's almost like when I, you know, when I interview chefs, it's a very, very similar, you see all the passion and then all of a sudden it might become in their previous jobs about output and production and volume.
Yeah.
So it's like those early stages, I feel like for a brewer and a lot of the breweries out there, they've got to make it work. And for them, that's volume and that's something that sells a big amount.
Yeah.
And that means that your passion ends up turning into, I don't know, apart from the chips as a sort of reference.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's sort of like, I remember early stages with Dan, it was like he was really into the fact that we're a small, very, very, very small brewery, that its only pressure is to brew beer that goes incredibly well with our food and our environment.
Yeah.
So it kind of means that you're able to just keep that fun in the game. Whereas, you know, if you think about some of the chefs, it's like, yeah, just I feel like that's something that's key as well.
Yeah, it's a real tough one, that. And, you know, through my career, you know, sort of worked with brewers and, you know, quite a lot. And, you know, I guess it is like chefs in a way as well, that, you know, maybe they are working in a brewery that there's a kind of Big Mac of beer that's there, but they obviously want to be off a lot of the time doing the, you know, the fun, fancy, you know, Earl Grey IPA, you know, with some nail varnish chucked in or whatever, you know, something a bit wild. So, you know, it can be difficult, you know, when you're getting more mass to, you know, sort of keep them producing consistency also, you know.
It's been a challenge and we're in a great spot at the moment. But yeah, having brewing a house lager that does the volume, that's what most people want to drink when they go to any bar or restaurant, right? But on the flip side, doing the juicy and interesting stuff. So having that balance, really, I guess. But I think we're in a spot at the moment.
I think the brewery and the restaurant in Bundo, it's the same thing, right? And I think that's those values that you have in. If when we started Bundo, people predominantly didn't know what they were ordering in terms of food or beer. I mean, we'd get a lot of the people, we'd get the beer geeks in, the people who knew every single brew that was coming out and when it was getting launched. But you'd also get people that literally need handholding in, as they're doing at most great restaurants. Like, I always look to the waiter and say, listen, what do you think I should order? Cool, go for it.
Yeah.
Like, that's that handholding approach that I think we're quite good at. If you're into something somewhere else, we've got something in Bundo that you're definitely going to enjoy.
Yeah.
So I think that works.
And then just thinking about your marketing campaigns then, you know, and you're in this real sweet spot at the moment where you've got massive cult following, you're starting to get into, you know, more mass consciousness with the, you know, the bigger openings and, you know, getting into new cities and all that. But I've always thought your marketing has been excellent. And I know it's not always been one person all the way through, but it seems to be, you know, whoever you've had, you know, I think you guys in the nicest way, like, always punch above your weight. You know, you always stand out more than the size of you. You know, you've got that kind of national consciousness and coolness. You know, is there a kind of ethic behind the marketing or the marketing campaigns? Because, you know, as an outsider looking in, A, they always look polished. B, they always look attention grabbing. And C, you know, they're memorable, you know, like the stuff that you're doing. So, yeah, what's going on there?
I think a few factors, really. I think me and May are both kind of interested in kind of the visual stuff. So when I was studying graphic design, the guy that sits next to me on that course, he's our designer right now. So known him for 10 years. So I think the visual aspect of the design of the poster, the food obviously plays a massive part. And I don't know, I guess we just really like detail. I think in everything we do.
I think we both very much, possibly a bit too much, look at what everyone's always doing a lot. And I think we're quite obsessive about looking at how brands that we admire and actually, you know, have admired for years, how their approach is got being careful. But there's a lot of function and not a lot of So the functionality of their marketing is way ahead of where we're at, and we're working on it. But their tone of voice and their personality and their brand and their DNA is not necessarily, it's almost manufactured. Whereas I think the only way that I can sort of relate that is that where we live and breathe it. So therefore it's always kind of, it's there naturally, and it's there as its core.
I think it's emotion, right? So, you know, they are functional, and I think yours is a lot more emotional. And I would also argue most of your campaigns usually are quite brand building. You know, like, it's not the short, it's not buy this now, it's $2.99. You know, it's usually a loftier thought and something a bit more interesting, you know, and that's absolutely why it stands out, you know. And in the marketing side of things, is there a campaign where you really felt, oh yes, that was a cracker? You know, go on, Marco.
Well, I think thanks for those kind words, actually. But we do work with a lot of amazing people in house, and we've employed some fantastic marketing managers that have helped develop the tone of voice and some of the strategy as well. But I think the favorite one for me was the Bundo Does Meat, which we did in Veganuary a few years ago. It was kind of photography led. We led with Bundo Does Meat. People actually thought we were putting meat on the menu, and there was a bit of hoo-ha on Twitter. It was the first time we explored kind of analog meat. So we did a campaign. It was in collaboration with Meatless Farm.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one that got the most kind of noise and buzz. I thought the dishes were banging. I thought the posters and the graphics looked amazing. But the whole cheeky messaging of shocking someone to think that we're putting meat on the menu, but really we're putting meat on the menu just for a short period of time. And you're in Veganuary, right?
I thought it was a super smart campaign. I mean, we've batted around we've got slightly differing opinions on it, but it's just an interesting area is the kind of analog meat. I call it analog meat.
Is that what you call it?
That's what I call it.
Is that like meat-shaped veggie vegan things?
Yeah, that's right. So just meat, proteins that are trying to imitate meat as well, how I would, mm-hmm. I would sort of describe it as. But it sort of feels like I'm not sure if that's something that Bundo needs to play in. I think as specials and as campaigns, yeah, we can have a little bit of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting area, and I'm not sure, based on what I've said previously, like, hey, we cook food that tastes great and it doesn't need the chew or the bite or the, you know. And I for me personally, look, I'm not a vegetarian now, and I was brought up one. And I just think the ultimate philosophy for people and their, you know, and their eating and thinking about things consciously is eat the best meat you can and eat it less often. Because naturally, eating the best meat you can, probably you can't eat it every day anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a really natural way of looking at it. And I think that's the way that I'd like Bundo to be, is that let us do the best veggie version of food and let someone else do the best meat version of food.
Yeah. No, it makes complete sense. And then obviously there was the latest one, which hit the headlines a little bit in terms of the Iceland campaign, or Iceland got involved with you in the campaign. So tell us a wee bit about that, because that was super interesting. And you played a blinder into a checkmate situation where they had to actually come back and say fair play.
What did we do? We put a post out. We did, it was around Christmas time, and we had some Christmas specials on, and we mocked up like a party, frozen party box, you know, the kind of the boxes that the supermarkets do at Christmas where you get your samosas and you put them in the oven. So we mocked up a box with the Iceland logo on it, and it said Spiceland, right? And we did it, you know, come to Bundabus come to Spiceland. We got a cease and desist letter from Iceland because of that, just because we used their logo.
I think it was 30 pages.
Yeah, the document was 30 pages, but it was a two-liner in terms of what we needed to get rid of. So they asked us to remove the pause. They said we've appropriated their logo because we used the Iceland logo and just put, you know, made it into Spiceland. So we had to take the post down. We took the post down on the absolute last minute that they asked us to do. And then we thought, let's get some mileage out of it. Let's, we posted the picture of the cease and desist letter, which we got a lot of people talking about. I think
and your headline was cease this season or something like that, to be jolly, what was it?
Yes
More like this.
Yeah. See? And then we, off the back of that, we did a kind of amnesty by if customers or guests brought in an Iceland gift voucher, they'd get a combo for two for free. And we'd donate the Iceland gift vouchers to a local food bank. So we turned it into a positive and a great story. And we had a bit of fun as well. Tom, who we worked with on social media, he was happy because I think he always wanted to get a cease and desist. It was like a badge of honor for him.
Yeah.
Caused a few spicy conversations with him in Bundle, but. Yeah, I think ultimately me and Marco were just, I think we were like, look, if we actually got a caught, we'd go in a Spiceland van or...
Yeah. you'd go in a fridge or a freezer, wouldn't you?
Exactly. it's all fun and games, and I think sometimes with the bigger brands, it's just fear-mongering, isn't it?
I think they were great in the end. I mean, I think when they come back and said fair play, I just thought that was a lovely moment where your common sense prevailed. Like, you know, I get all the IP and the brand guidelines and protection, and you know, if you let stuff go, then where does that end you up? But at the same time, and I think it was the CEO that actually posted that, didn't he? He said something like fair play on Twitter or X or whatever.
I believe so, yeah. I think he comments directly targeted at him, and which is great. Listen, our fans are pretty loyal, amazing.
And I think he's always seems like a solid guy, you know, seen him on Question Time and documentaries and things like that. And actually, you know, you feel like he really does care about you know, his customers and that kind of thing too. So I'm glad he sort of stepped in.
Yeah,
so.
it was a good response, and he's heard about little old Bundabus, so it kind of worked as a campaign, and it was great that a lot of our kind of followers on social media were sticking up for us as well. And it was just great.
We should do a collab for next Christmas.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that. I can't wait to see the Bundabus range. In Iceland, that would be wonderful. Why not? You never know.
Who knows?
You never know. That would be pretty cool. And then a couple of other things I was going to talk to you about was obviously, you know, you had the next few restaurants, Manchester, Oxford Road?
It's actually Oxford Street. Oxford Road train station.
A post person's nightmare. So that was like a car park, right?
It was, yeah. So it was kind of in use as a car park. I remember when we did our first viewing, there was still cars parked around it, and I think it gave us some really good vibes. It gave us some very similar features and detail that Piccadilly's got in terms of the great glazed brick, the atrium, the lightness and airiness of the site. And I think the location was just a bit of a winner for us, because it just had a lot of football. It was another end of town, a different sort of market to our Piccadilly site, which is only less than 10-minute walk away.
Yeah.
But I think the opportunity for us, and we had a really good feel about Manchester because of how well Piccadilly's landed. Mm-hmm. So it gave us a really good bit of confidence. But it was introduced actually as well. So Tom Heverington and Bruntwood, who's the who's the landlord, basically kind of almost offered it up to Bundo. So it was a bit of an introduction, which was, again, a really nice new element to us seeking property, because previously we're just looking on Google what's available.
Yeah.
And which landlord's going to take us seriously. But yeah, it's a really, really great site. I think it's one that feels, what you mentioned earlier about people sitting next to each other and getting to chat and talk about what they're eating. And that is what Bundo was. That's what it was built to do. And it's supposed to have that chaos around it. Like, am I sitting down here? Am I not? Am I at the bar? Like, I think there's a lot of structure in most restaurants, and Bundo can sit in that mad little world that we operate in.
Well, I think what's nice is then you can get it to suit your mood. It can be really fluid. You can still go and have all these different nights out. As you say, if you sit together, you sit at the bar, you do this, you do that. You know, so actually that hopefully would then boost occasionality as well, because, you know, it's not rigid in any way. That's definitely what I liked about it, you know, a few times that I've been.
I think it is a flexible dining option for people, because you can go in on your own, have a pint and a pot. You can go on a date night and go with a group of mates, and it's you can eat and drink as little or as much as you like. So I do think that's where we're kind of popular.
Yeah. And then going into Birmingham, obviously, Birmingham's the latest one, right? So in terms of that, I mean, did you look to change any core, you know, cornerstones of design, you know, to try something new out? Did you have to sort of tweak it slightly to ingratiate yourself to the Birmingham Massive, or how did that work?
Yeah, so I think we basically, the building itself is quite a different layout to any other Bundo. So kind of smaller footprint, but we've got a first floor dining area, which is what I'm sat in at the moment, and it's like, there's lots of nooks, crannies, little rooms, because it was an old pub. Oh, it was a pub in its previous couple of iterations. But it's kind of got these smaller areas where you've got blind spots, you've got quite a little nook. And I think that meant that we needed to recognize that slightly, because it can't just be refectory, be a hall, identical to sort of what we've done previously. But we've still kept a lot of that. So there's still long tables, and we still share them with other customers, and we still try to create that sort of buzz and atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's just try to have a little bit of a nod to pub culture, I guess.
Yeah. Makes sense. And then in the Birmingham, you know, public have received it well, or is it a real awareness discovery journey for them? How's that working out?
Sorry, Marco, jump in.
No, you go for it.
Definitely some more awareness is required. So the journey is still early. But Birmingham, so far, everyone that seems to be coming through is absolutely loving it. So the feedback has been incredible. And it is a city that we talk about a lot, very respectful of how well they know our cuisine. And also how well they know beer. It's got some great spots. It's got some great breweries, and I think you've got to appreciate that we may have some similar propositions around us, and probably more so than we've had in some of the other cities that we've operated in. But for me, that's actually a bit more of a it's just different. You know, you should be able to utilize each of these different people or different brands or different restaurants, even the smaller sort of curry house. Birmingham's got it in spades, but it's how you would utilize Bundo in that month or in that 3 months is that you eat out.
Yeah.
So I think there's a bit of work to do. So
yeah. Cool. So last couple of things then I was just going to touch on, and we'll do some fun questions. So obviously very much a people business, Bundo Bust, and you've got a reputation for being so. So how many employees have you got now?
About 120, I'd say.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So no small thing.
scarier when you see it out loud.
Yeah, yeah, that's a big barbell in the Christmas night out, isn't it? So just really just to talk about the company culture a bit and, you know, and how you view it and, you know, any tips for anyone to create a strong culture and get everyone behind what it is that you're doing, you know, how are you managing that?
So I think it's definitely ever evolving. I think we've done a massive piece of work about trying to boil it down to what's really important to Bundo as we grow. But I still think there's still work to do on that as well. So I just think that it can't be the same for every stage of growth. It just can't. Yeah. You've got to be real. Early days Bundo, 100% family culture. I'd know about people's visa situations. I'd know about people's kids. I'd know it all, and still do for the most I'm able to. But there's family culture, core values. I think growing up in a really small family business for me is really kind of distilled that into how I approach our team. Development, being able to grow at a pace in the healthiest manner so that the people can actually grow at the same time as well. Because you've probably heard many stories, Mark, where people kind of pushed into roles where they're not ready, but they take that because it's the natural and possibly the only route of progression. So Bundo, as it's getting to this point, it's sort of creating new avenues and new roles every day. We've boiled down some of our culture and values and vision, but I think there's still some work to do. But genuinely just try to care about it. I think hospitality is everything you would want out of a first job for many people that start here, right?
Yeah.
Even our chefs, many of them, it's their first job and actually away from the country that they originally came from. So there's lots of layers to that.
Can you think what Bundo Bust's values are? And, you know, can you share those, or is that a big secret?
It's not a secret. Is it a secret? I don't know.
No, it's not. Go for it.
So we've got everybody welcome. Our welcome, please. We've got no beef. Everybody good time. Eye of the Tiger, which is kind of about the detail. And they're the values.
Those are good.
Yeah.
Love those. Yeah.
So
You know, the only reason I don't know why, I think this might be part of Bundo and its tone of voice. It's, imagine that on a poster in a site that is not Bundo. And that's what scares me about this type of kind of next level thinking. So that's why it's an internal badge. It's an internal culture rather than an outwardly marketable objective, I seem to see quite a lot more of nowadays. Recruitment's tough, and I can see that that's why it's needed to be used.
Yeah, but you wouldn't really have that on a post. I mean, very few brands have their internal values or their internal brand DNA or anything like that on the outside. They express it in other ways, and I guess it's those customer moments that's when it'll express itself. You know, when but of all the ones that you said there, I wouldn't be unhappy walking around with those on a tote bag.
Yeah.
Some of the corporate, I missed one. One's too much spicy, but some of the core phrases have come from stuff that has been in sites. Obviously, we're not listing out the detail of what that core value means, but too much spicy was a phrase that matey, our head chef, used to say when something was a bit spicy and into a.
Yeah, and as an example, that one.
Nice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that, as an example, that's about being bold, confident in yourself, in our flavors, and that can resonate throughout everything that we do.
Yeah.
It's like being proud. It's like that's what too much spicy kind of means to us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nice. I mean, too much spicy is fantastic. I mean, that's TMable. I think, you know, that's absolutely brilliant. And then the last thing really, before we get into fun questions, was just thinking about you guys. So what's next for you guys and what's next for Bundlebust?
More bundles, I guess. Yeah. I mean, you'd be looking to go again next year, I think. Not sure where, but, you know, there's a few opportunities, so who knows? But
yeah,
we'll be doing another restaurant next year.
In terms of locations, we've had a little bit of a think about, we think operationally we were waiting it being more about, hey, we've got a branch in Birmingham, therefore let's look at the Midlands. So naturally you would sort of look at Nottingham, and then we'd start to sort of think about the surrounding areas. And I think what we've recently started to just discuss very early stages is Birmingham's just about as far as kind of any other exciting city from our sort of kind of Manchester Leeds kind of arena.
Yeah.
And it has worked from an operational perspective. So we might head further north. We might head to further south. So yeah, some exciting cities that we've got a few little ideas with. Bristol keeps coming up with our customers.
Yeah.
And it kind of keeps resonating in terms of the market. And I think we're going to probably check out Bristol soon, but 100% more bundles. We're super excited. We've got, we seem to have a really good team of people around us now that can help us get there as well. So that's key.
Brilliant. Cool. And then, so just getting into some fun questions. So mark out of 10 questions. They're not really marks out of 10. They're just your favourite things. So, favourite city to eat in?
Does it have to be just one?
Nope.
Okay. I don't know. Recently, I went to Edinburgh, which I thought was fantastic. You know, Palmerston and loads of cool spots there. I'm looking forward to checking out Glasgow this time on a food trip. London, obviously, you've got so much choice. Manchester's great. Not traveled much in Europe for the last couple of years, but yeah, been to Brussels, which was mega. But yeah, there's just foods everywhere. I don't know, there's too many good ones.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Yeah. What about you, Mia?
I still get a genuine sort of buzz off getting into London.
Yeah.
Whenever there's an opportunity for me and Marco to go down there, we tend to possibly miss the reason why we were going there in the first place. just ended up going to a restaurant that we really wanted to check out. So yeah, I just think there's a lot of excitement. Manchester still, I do get a kick out of how much is sort of opening. I think Manchester relates more to what we do.
Yeah.
And there's more brands and more restaurants that I think are on our level. But then London, you know, Rochelle Canteen, when we went there, that was incredible. Just a few spots that we really like.
Yeah.
Some of the OGs as well.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, if we don't keep using those, they're going to go, you know, which is a worry. So, I try my best to make sure that I'll obviously try and check out the new ones, but at the same time, not forget the classics or they'll disappear. Favourite hotel?
Hotel.
Hoxton as a chain, I think, is good. I think it's reliable. Mm-hmm. Nicely designed. They've got a good bar. They usually have a good restaurant in the hotels, and yeah, pretty cool. I think that'd be the restaurant, the hotel of choice when I'm traveling to London. I've also stayed in the one as well.
I wish I could say that I'm at that point where I enjoy the hotel as much. It's somewhere I lay my head.
Yeah.
And it's probably that. Because I should go home a bit earlier. But
Mayor rocks in at 5 a.m. and then he's back up at 6 a.m. So, whereas I like a nice lie-in, I guess, and my sleep.
Yeah. And well, you sound like Alan Brazil at Cheltenham on the Guinness. Yeah. He didn't turn up for his radio show this morning. Favourite coffee shop?
Yeah, I love my coffee. I think it's always it's always, there's a different independent coffee shop in every city that we go to, and I like them for that city. So some, it's actually something that we've got in Bundo. It's part of our thing. So we try and say to all of our team, listen, you need to go to this coffee shop, and you need to get the team the coffees in from this coffee shop, and it's got to be the independent. It's got to be the small one that's round the corner from a Bundo.
Yeah.
So so Leeds, Lanes is the one for me. Manchester, Idle Hands is great.
Mm-hmm.
In Birmingham, Faculty.
Mm-hmm.
Each independent for me.
Wait, a few. Marco?
Yeah, same. I love the independent coffee. So there's it's a good one there where I live called Tambourine. That's really good, but again, are we always supporting the local neighbours and the independent ones, especially Lanes in Leeds. They kind of started at a similar time when we started there, and they've been there about 10 years, and it started off as just a little espresso shop where it was more takeout, and they did two sandwiches, and they've expanded three times. They're on two floors, and they've got like a nice brunch menu, lots of good egg dishes, and it's been really nice to see their journey as we've grown, they've grown as well.
Yeah, and then in Liverpool, sorry, I missed one. Bull Street Coffee or Mother, they're both cracking. So it's just supporting the indies, and I feel like they're the heartbeat as well for the city. They're still the place that you can go to and just say, hey, how's it all going?
Yeah.
You get a quick download of how the city's feeling or what's happening.
Yeah.
We always say this, if you go for a coffee in the morning to the local coffee shop and they're busy, you know you're going to have a good day. If they're quiet in the morning, you know you're going to be quiet. It's just it's the barometer of the day.
Yeah, them's the rules. What about favourite pubs or bars, and what would be your favourite tipple?
Okay. A lot of good pubs. So in Bradford, I really like the Corn Dolly or the Fighting Cock, which are kind of trad pubs.
Mm-hmm.
Manchester, we're in an Irish bar the other day called Mulligan's, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Ever at the Peak. I've got a lot of time for the kind of the people that started the craft beer scene as well. So Southampton Arms in London,
mm-hmm.
which is in Kentish Town, which is a fab pub. Port Street Beer House, North Bar in Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you where I went in Glasgow. The Pot and Still.
Yes.
I went there last year, and that was like the selection of whiskey. So just love pubs, I love bars. I just love it, you know.
Yeah. I think Pot and Still is legendary. It's like, is it Renfrew Street or something like that? But yeah, Renfrew Street. So absolutely, yeah. Phenomenal. Love it.
Different reasons to visit a pub depending on what you're after. Is it an ale or is it a craft beer? But I'll drink anything, to be honest, but into German lager at the moment and cask ale, I guess, as well.
I always think cask's going to have a comeback at some point properly, but it's just, you know, it's just never quite happened. But yeah, I mean, so many great reasons to love it, you know, so yeah. And what about you, Mia? You got a favourite bar or pub?
I don't want to get booed off stage, but unfortunately cask isn't something that I can get on. I'm not on board with it. But I feel my theory is that it's just maybe, I think cask is it's an emotional product. Like if you're brought up with cask beer, or if you're brought up in that sort of environment where you may have seen it, or you know, your uncle or your dad or was into it. I feel like that's probably where cask's love is. Yeah. Me, not cask. But in terms of beer, I'm getting a taste for juicy pale ales again.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of went off them for a little bit, and now I'm genuinely getting back into them. I think the wave of lager and pale, it seems to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Bars, I really like. So if you're thinking like really nice cocktails, I think really like Schofield's in Manchester's. Cracking. Tempted Blaine, we were in there the other night. That was really good for some really good cocktails. The bar in Hawksmoor, I mean, they still have a lovely atmosphere and lovely vibe. I think for a bar in a restaurant, I think they've really hit that They've hit that really, really well. But yeah, I love pubs too. So some of the OG pubs, love going into them, love the feeling of them, that warning atmosphere. No, nothing can beat it. So White Locks in Leeds. And yeah, some of the beer spots, even Beer Moth in Manchester is cool, just to sort of go through that range of some of the wilder beers, especially if I'm out with my partner Lucy. She's really early in the beer journey, and he's really starting to like juicy pales, probably why I'm starting to like them again. So I'm trying to guide her into which way to go. But it's really exciting. I think the beer journey is a really exciting one that I think people forget how varied and multifaceted it can be.
Cool. And then last question, favorite restaurant and what would you be having there?
I need to think about this one.
Let's try and keep it under five.
Under five? Too many. It's nice to... In Bradford, right, okay, if I want to go for a proper Bradford curry, I'd go to the International, which is fantastic. I'd probably get, my order is like the lamb curry, and if I'm with a mate or my girlfriend, we'll share like the mixed grill for two starter, which is a bit of everything. In Leeds, there's a new spot called the Empire Cafe doing rotisserie chicken, but the real stars of the show are the small plates that change all the time. So they're absolutely fantastic. I think it's got a bit of a duck parfait eclair on at the moment. That's mega. And he does a spam fritter with some kind of curry sauce, which is really good. So they're kind of the best local ones. London, I think my favourite would be Rochelle Canteen for sure, especially on Sunday day when you can sit outside. That's three.
Nice. Nicely done. What about you, Mia?
Oh, mate, it's a tough one, that. It's a really tough one. I don't think I frequent a restaurant enough to then think of it as being my favourite restaurant.
Yeah, true,
I'm still very much want to check out everything that's new. Yeah, yeah, there's a restaurant of the moment, that's for sure. But I'd say great. I think Devonshire was cracking, probably my last meal that I really, really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably say Mall of Home. Mm-hmm. Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, Higher Ground. Actually, Higher Ground is banging as well. So really enjoyed that. But yeah, man, I wish I could go to a restaurant every week and be that guy and be that, you know, but it's not me.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. Well, listen, I'll love you and leave you. Thanks so much for being on. This has been brilliant. And I already know it's a classic episode. So we'll get that out, and we'll get some of the content out as well. So I'll let you know when it's coming out, and hopefully I'll get up and see you soon as well. So thanks so much.
No, really, really appreciate it, Mark. And yeah, with the guests that you've had so far and putting me and Mark on them, in that mix, it's pretty cool. So thanks.
Yeah. No, don't worry, you're up there. No worries about that. Loads of people will want to hear from you. So I'm really excited about getting this out. So I'll be in touch soon. I hope you have a great weekend and a great St. Paddy's Day. And I'll catch up with you soon.
You too, Matt.
Cheers.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, guys. Cheers. So there we go, a fantastic classic episode, instant classic from Mayor and Marco at Bundlebus. So if you are up north in Birmingham and upwards, then do go and check them out. You'll just not regret it. And you might have to queue for a little while to get in, but once you do, you will feel so smug and so warm, not only from the too much spicy, but from the warmth of the experience and the fellow diners as well. There's a lot of interaction there, and of course the team. But hats off, lads. I think you've just done one of the greatest things in the last few years in food and drink. And if I had a spare couple of million, I would be investing in you straight away. So go well, and I hope you build and build and build, and I can't wait to see what the next few years holds for you.
This podcast is sponsored by Vita Mojo, the all-in-one restaurant management platform helping operators grow ATV,
reduce tech complexity, and serve guests better. Just visit vitamojo.com/supersonic and get in touch with the team right away. That's vitamojo.com/supersonic. So this is me, Mark McSee, signing off for another podcast, and I'm really looking forward to the next time we're together. Next time, we'll hear from many, many more interesting people with top tips, tricks, and tales that will make your brand boom.